Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Nerdy Notions as we end what we consider season two and the
end,
and the end of the X-Men run minus New Mutants, which will be done much later because we're going to start doing WandaVision on Friday/Saturday. It's time for Nerdy Notions with Sasha Kaplan.
Welcome to what I hope will be the last of my suffering in X-Men films.
It's not. It's definitely not.
You don't know that. Maybe New Mutants is good.
I actually have heard some pretty good things about New Mutants.
Maybe it's good. Maybe when Marvel Cinematic Universe finally does Mutants, I won't have to sit here and bash my head against the wall. I just, look.
Okay, let's be honest with you. Let's be honest with you. You will always find a reason to want to bash your head against the wall. You find reason a lot of reasons to smash your head against the wall.
No, I don't. I don't want to smash my head against the wall. I want these movies to be good. I wanted these movies to be successful and well-written. They're just not. And it also does help the fact that, you know, I did grow up on the X-Men and they're sort of like my wheelhouse. And aside from like Young Avengers, the X-Men up until, I guess, recent history is this history that I know the best. And to see epic storylines get crushed by shitty writing and shitty directors and to crap on. And I've noticed a pattern. Do you know how you can tell if an X-Men movie is going to be good or bad? Are all the characters named? Probably not. That's flag one. Any major characters are unnamed? Flag number two. If that character is named, are they given a bullshit name just for the sake of an Easter egg? Yes, they are. Then that is another red flag. Like, I don't expect these things, but it's sort of like, it just all went downhill. Like, I even enjoyed The Wolverine, despite some issues. Like, I enjoyed that movie. It was fun. It was fun to see Wolverine outside of his comfort zone, even though I found some issues with the storytelling. That was a great movie. I love First Class. I still rewatch it. It's a fantastic film, despite a few issues. Like, no movie is perfect. And I talked about, like, when we did the First Class review of, like, why certain things didn't work, but the overall movie as a whole was still very solid. You'd think after the shit show that was Apocalypse, they would have thought, hey, maybe we should scale it down a peg and maybe focus on developing a really good story that comes to a worthy conclusion. Nope. No, because again, Sasha's not allowed to be happy anymore in X-Men movies. And I will admit completely that I bashed the crap out of Days of Future Past and I have zero regrets about it. I don't care how many people enjoyed that movie. Let us commence with the last of the shit show. So Jessica Chastain made a very big mistake. Instead of signing up for Iron Man 3 to play Maya Hansen or for Aunt May to play Hope Van Dyne, she decided this was the first good movie the first Marvel property movie she wanted to be in. Like, I just, like, I can't imagine that phone call. So we have a character that has no personality, is just a generic bad guy with the most cliche backstory. Sign me up! Like, I'm not even that big of a fan of Jessica Chastain, but, like, this does not seem to be the high point of her career. But anyway, funny note. Originally, the villains were supposed to be Skrulls. What do the Skrulls and the X-Men have in common? What part do the Skrulls play in X-Men history?
I don't know.
Pretty much none as far as I can remember. If anybody listening can remember a particular Skrull-related X-Men storyline, hit me up because I don't remember anything. I remember Fantastic Four. I remember the Avengers. I remember maybe some mutants hand in fall because of Secret Invasion stuff. But, like, I don't remember any story that had the Skrulls as part of, like, an X-Men-related story focused. Like, it makes no sense. But, okay. So they, but when this movie was being made, so the bad guys in the Dark Phoenix, well, quote unquote bad guys, in the Dark Phoenix storyline are the Shi'ar. They're this alien race, and I think the Phoenix destroys something that is theirs. It's really big, one of their planets or something. And then the Phoenix goes on trial, and it's a whole thing. But we get none of this. All right, all right. Ugh, okay. So this is Simon Kinberg's, as we mentioned last episode, directorial debut. Oh boy! Because for a first-time director, the one thing you really want to give him is a big blockbuster movie. We'll see how well this turns out. So originally he conceived this to be two films, but the studio said no, and that created a mess. I'm like, he probably should have thought about the fact that, like, Apocalypse wasn't that well received, and that maybe planning two more movies wasn't the smartest thing. But it's also very unclear to me what these two movies would have been about. Was it going to be, like, the first one was going to be the Phoenix Saga, and then the second one was going to be the Dark Phoenix Saga? Because I could see that working, I guess, but it just makes no sense to me. All right. So the film opens on a narration by Gene about who we are and our agency and fate, destiny, bullshit. And we see, we are in 1975, and we see a flashback of a young Jean with her parents in the car. And she changes the station, either purposefully or subconsciously, because she doesn't like the boring music her parents are listening to. The voices, she starts hearing voices, her head hurts, and her mom, like, looks over and, like, wheels in. It's unclear to me. Like, I guess their heads start hurting, too, or something, if I remember correctly. And then Jean's mom's, like, swerves into a truck. And parents die.
Well, you get a little bit more clarification later as more memories of this comes up. They do.
But anyway, at this point, it seems like the, okay, so the mom swerves into the car later. It's sort of revealed that Jean accidentally, like, made her parents feel the pain that she was feeling because of her powers or whatever. And that causes the car crash, or the truck veers into them or something because of Jean's powers.
So what it is that when I'm going to hop ahead for you.
Go for it.
So what happened was, is that she, when she finds her father, she looks into his memories of what happened. And what it shows is that the, when she was younger and she had that, like, little, I guess, tantrum or headache, whatever, in the car, she ended up incapacitating her mother.
Right, which caused all the swerving.
Which caused the swerve, yeah.
So, but what we know right now is that basically car crash, parents die. And Jean goes to live with Charles. Jean wakes up in the hospital and doesn't have a scratch on her. Charles arrives and breaks the news that her parents are dead. Charles looks a bit haired, and he's had a bad week. He gives some words of wisdom. He has a gift for her, and Charles takes Jean to the X-Men school. So if Jean, basically he takes her to the school, and she's like, no, I'll break stuff. And I'm like, okay. And Charles is like, well, if you break something, I can fix it. I'm like, okay, what if she breaks a person? Are you gonna fix that too?
Yes.
Also, not gonna lie, this is not the greatest kid actress in the world. Not the worst, but not the best. Anyway, we're back in 1992. Oh, look, hey, I'm still not alive. 1 year shy of birth. Okay.
And we don't have Power Rangers yet.
And we don't have Power Rangers yet. We don't even have the 90s X-Men yet. But US you do. In the US you do, in Russia you don't. So, but anyway. Point being, we see the launch of the Endeavor, which is a rocket, space astronauts. Cool. Charles wants to take Hank has built, like, a fancier plane and has put in some upgrades, and he wants to take the plane. Hank says it's not ready, but then the president calls on the X phone. Like, can we, like, let's have a cliche counter. The generic phone with a line to the president, governor, mayor. That's cliche number one. Michael, write this down. Cliche one. I'm serious. Write it down. Don't just pretend. I'm going to be asking you about the cliche counter afterwards. Okay, fine. The bat phone rings.
And I didn't write the bat phone ring.
I mean, to be honest, DC should sue. But anyway, so the bat phone rings. And by the way, DC should sue the movie, not us. Anyway, so the bat phone rings, and it's the president, because he's totes cool with mutants now, after mutants, you know, almost set off an apocalyptic level event. And like, yeah, Charles sort of saved the day, but like, okay, fine, fine. In the last 10 years, mutants are like popular because it's the 90s, you know, whatever. What happened exactly at the end of Apocalypse? We don't know, but they still have those ugly uniforms. Actually, they have the generic uniforms, not the cool ones we saw at the end of Apocalypse. So this movie gets -2 points for that alone, because I actually like those costumes. So the off-brand Star Trek uniforms, and Mystique is in this movie? Why is she in this movie? She serves literally no purpose in this movie. Just like she served no purpose in the last movie. Ah, look at that. All right. So the lame spin on the classic yellow suits, they get on a plane. And I have to ask, so they're going in a plane because there's something wrong with the rocket and the astronauts are in trouble. What use will Mystique have on the plane? What role will she have in rescuing the astronauts?
Mystique?
You need Hank to fly the plane. You need Kurt to teleport. You need Gene and Scott to get rid of anything in the way. And you need Kurt to teleport and,
here's the thing, though. Who was essentially the general that was watching everything up in the sky at on the plane that had to give the orders? She was the one giving the orders because that's what Xavier wanted her to do.
Okay, but after 10 years of training... No. After 10 years of training, these kids to be full-fledged X-Men, they still need Mommy Raven to call out orders? I'm calling BS on that. I'm sorry. This is pure bullshit.
Let me ask you something. When you're on a sports team, or if you're in the military, who's the one that gives the shots?
Fine, but that, like Mystique Raven,
of a team in this instance, Raven is the shot caller. That is her role.
Fine, whatever. She's here to be the generic leader that will be dead in 5 minutes. Fine. So, the plane comes out of the basketball court. That's a nice nod to the original trilogy. Charles puts on Cerebro and calls NASA for an update. The aircraft was not designed for space travel. It makes it, but just barely. The Quinjet is not designed for space travel. The Endeavor is sort of floating out in space, and Scott blasts the ship so Kurt can get in. Good thing those guys are wearing their spacesuits. Storm seals the air gaps. How? There's no oxygen in space. I mean, I could guess she uses the oxygen inside the aircraft, I guess.
I think.
But that's not her power. Like, that should have been a Gene thing, I feel like. But, okay.
Well, no, the thing is that if you notice, ice follicles will freeze up onto the ship. You notice that. So there is some level of type of moisture.
But so Storm controls the weather. She doesn't. You know what? Forget it.
She was able to.
I'm just not going to question it. I'm just not going to question it, because this is the least of this movie's problems.
I like Scott's little gun, though, to shoot his ray.
That was cute. I think they actually used something like that. In X-Men Evolution, they had a similar thing designed for Storm, where she had a hookup on the top of the plate that put her at the top of the plane, and so she could, like, hide them. It was pretty cool, actually. Okay, anyway. So Kurt teleports them in. Kurt actually teleports Peter in. Peter grabs everyone, and then they teleport back to the ship, but the commander is missing. Charles goes, we can't leave anyone behind. I'm like, girl, you are down there. You are not up here. There can only be one person calling orders, and I can't believe I'm saying this. I'd rather it be Mystique at this point. Because at least she's there and can see what's actually happening in the conditions. Charles is just there to annoy everybody. Okay, so the heat is spiking because there's this thing approaching. Gene and Kurt go in. Kurt gets, like, a cool helmet made for him. Gene is holding the ship together as Kurt teleports to the commander back. Jean is hit with cosmic rays. Jean then absorbs the cosmic rays. She floats in space, and then Kurt is able to bring her in. Jean is somehow not dead. And then Scott and Jean hug, because yay. Also, for two characters that are supposedly, I don't know, were they supposed to be dating?
I think when they first met in Apocalypse, they weren't, because that was like the introduction of Scott into it. But you don't know how much time has legitimately passed from Apocalypse.
10 years.
Oh, 10 years?
Remember, we do actually get carbon dates for these movies.
That's right. So it's been 10 years. So, I mean, at this point.
9 years even.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that they did do was, like, when they're on the ship and, like, you could tell that, like, they're all nervous flying up into space. Like, you could just see Scott kind of put his hand up because he's sitting in the seat behind Jean, and you see Jean grab it.
Yeah.
So that kind of automatically right there gives you the...
I think this kind of, yeah, but this also goes to the fact that this movie, the emotional level of this movie is at like a zero. Like, all of the actors are doing their very best, seemingly, but the writing and the way everything progresses just leaves no emotion. But anyway, they return to Earth. They have fans. They're basically heroes. And then Mystique turns back from blue, or I guess she doesn't really like being the center of attention when she's blue. Okay, fine, whatever. Hank is going to look over Jean. Mystique says that she should be dead. Raven and Charles argue about sort of the risks and the dangers, and Charles is not taking the, like, that Charles is, like, basically pushing them too hard, and that, like, he's not the one being put in danger. They are, and how the missions are getting bigger and blah, 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 which is, like, cliche number two at this point. Of, like, you know, the hero telling the mentor that he's pushing them too hard and treating them unfairly. Then there's this bullshit line about, oh, X-Men, the women do all the lifting. Maybe it should be called X-Women. I'm like, dude, no. This is, like, bullshit level feminism. Just no. Like, no. It's the X-Men. It's the, you can call it the X-Mutants if you want. But, like, X-Women is too much of a, well, X-Mutants and X-Women is too much of a mouthful, but that's not the point. Like, that's just stupid. Jean's genetics have changed, apparently, and she's become stronger. Jean and Scott's kiss. There you go. They're together. And three aliens arrive on Earth. There's, like, this random house party full of rich people, and there's, like, a dog that's barking outside. And these aliens are, I guess, shape-shifting body snatchers? Cliched aliens number three cliche. Meanwhile, there's a mutant party in the woods. And there's a Dazzler cameo. Look at that. Look at this sparkly, sparkly. So I love, there's a lot of things that this movie should have been. Ask me what I think this movie could have been at the end, because that's important. But there's, like, this party in the woods, and clearly there's, like, all of the X-Kids are, like, outside at night. There's music, there's dancing, there's drinks that are probably not, that are alcoholic, question mark? Like, Jean gets drunk, so I guess they are alcoholic, which, like, at a boarding school, and, like, neither Raven nor Hank, as they're watching the security footage, do anything about this. On the one hand, cool teachers. On the one hand, irresponsible teachers, because you have, like, 14-year-olds at the school and, like, 12-year-olds, like, maybe a smidge of, like, supervision wouldn't hurt anybody, but then again, this is, like, the worst school ever to go to. Hank and Raven lament about how they're the only ones left from the first class. I'm like, yeah, because Bryan Singer killed all the other cool people. And they talk about sort of moving on and what that means. There's a lot of disconnect from Apocalypse. It seems like the events of Apocalypse didn't even really happen. It's never brought up. It's never, we're never, like, there's just, like, nothing. At least with Days of Future Past and with Apocalypse, they reference the events of the previous film to tie them all together. Here, they're, the only connection is the actors, but the events are never talked about or the effect that they had. So Charles gives a speech after a glorious introduction from the president. And then Jean says she wants, Jean and Scott are at the party, who are adults and are perfectly fine with underage drinking. You know what? Fine. I don't even care. This school's going to get blown up at some point. So why does it matter? There's like flames. The Phoenix is a trigger. So Jean gets slightly a little drunk. And he was like, Scott says something like, oh, you're the Phoenix. And apparently this is like, I hate to use this word, but like the Phoenix is apparently a trigger because like her head starts hurting automatically, like as soon as he says it. There's some wind. She like blows some wind or something and then she passes out. Charles leaves early and a camera closes in on an agent escorting Charles, who's clearly an alien. Jean is unconscious and Charles can't penetrate her mind because she's too powerful or something. Okay. Charles apparently made walls to keep out Jean's trauma. What that trauma is, we don't really know. Maybe killing your parents. It's kind of implied at the beginning that she does kill her parents without actually saying it. Or I could just be misinterpreting that because I know the comics. I don't know. Although actually the comics, she's still alive. So maybe because I know superhero movies. But the walls are being torn down, apparently. There's another voice in the distance of Jean's mind, and Jean is waking up. She's struggling, and then she heard her father. He's alive. And that Charles has been lying to her. Charles gets a nosebleed, and Jean kicks him out of her bed. Scott comes to Jean, and Jean plans to leave and go to her father, who's alive. Jean is changing, and Scott tells them that Jean is gone. So the blonde lady is part of the Dabari Empire, who only appeared in like one single freaking comic. So we're really scraping the bottom of the barrel. I guess we tried all the other cool ideas of X-Men comics. Now we have to go to the obscure stuff that no one remembers. So the power being contained inside one of them is the humans. They want to control that power and then begin again on Earth. Jean comes home, quote unquote, to her father, and he doesn't really look happy to see her. Oh, joy. She killed the mom, right? Raven asks Charles, what did he do? And to be perfectly honest, I don't quite understand what Charles did that was so bad. Like in the original Phoenix film, and Michael, you remember this, like they talked about how Charles had like manipulated Jean essentially by putting up all these barriers because she was too powerful and he didn't know how to control her. Here, the only thing Charles has actually done is prevent trauma, which arguably Jean could have put up those walls easily herself to protect her own mind from the trauma of killing her own mother, which does happen. I think that's like a real psychological thing. So like, why are we acting like Charles stabbed her mom for her?
Somebody's got to be the bad guy.
Right, but like there's so many cool comics where Charles is the bad guy. This, like, it would have been more interesting if like Charles was sending them on these like dangerous missions and everybody was constantly risking their lives and coming battered and more traumatized and he didn't care. Here, he basically, you know, by comparison, this doesn't look so bad. I don't get it. All right, so Dad has no picture. Oh, yeah. Let's see. Dad has no picture of Jean, just pictures of the mom and the dad. And he, like, and she asked, like, why didn't you ever look for me? And, like, on the one hand, I get the fact that, like, your wife died by the hand of your daughter. But, like, do you not care about your daughter at all? Like, that's just, like, that just makes me think, like, even if Jean's mom had survived, Jean and her father would not have had a good relationship.
Well, I think it kind of comes down, like, if you look at the beginning of Last Stand, and they show, like, the de-aging of Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen to do the thing where they first meet Jean Grey.
Yeah.
You know, the father is, like, she has a disease. She has an illness.
Yes, like you're saying, your daughter is ill, Mr. Gray. Yeah,
and it's like it's kind of like that with this one with her father again, but without him actually saying it.
No, I know.
But then it's something that we see again in another memory when, again, fast forwarding a little bit, when she forces Xavier to quote unquote walk, and she has him look into his memories of what happened at that time. Her father. So
yeah,
it's kind of like parallel in a way.
Yeah, except there's a problem. Again, there's no emotional payoff. We're just told that Charles becomes Jean's father figure and he has raised her, but we don't actually see it beyond like two scenes, and that's not enough to establish an emotional connection between these two characters. We also don't really see much of it in Apocalypse other than Jean is his student. Like, if he's supposed to be a father figure, show us. All right, so basically she's all, it's sort of implied that the dad couldn't handle her and basically dumped her on Xavier. It then shows that she accidentally killed her mom. The dad apologizes, but he says he lost his world that day. I'm like, well, your daughter kind of needed a dad, but whatever.
Yeah, you did.
So dad apologizes, and Jean takes it so well, she knocks dad out as the X-Jet lands. Jean thinks Charles used her for her powers based on what? Again, we're told that Jean believes this, but we're not given a reason why. We're not shown how she believes this, how she came to this conclusion.
And this was a problem with Last Stand too, because that was the whole premise that McClellan's Magneto put out there, was like, oh, Xavier's just using you for your power.
Right, but Eric was saying that for the purpose of using Jean for himself.
Yeah.
Or to some extent, he could have believed it, because I think, The Last Stand was a while ago, but, Charles was controlling, essentially, how much power Jean had on her and how much she could use, because he was essentially afraid of her powers. So you could make that argument a little bit better once we discover all these mental barriers that Jean had in Last Stand, even though that's still a very bad piece of writing. Here, we are not shown anything. Again, we only just met this Jean last movie. We don't really know much about her powers or who she is as a person. She barely has a personality, which I'm starting to think is just a problem with Jean Grey as a character. But we're not shown why she thinks Charles wants to use her for her powers, because he doesn't really use her for anything. She's not a teacher at the school. She's barely a superhero. Like, what is going on? So the police arrives and she destroys some cop cars. And then Kurt tries to, teleport to her, but it doesn't work. Scott tries to stop Storm because she comes at her, doesn't do anything. Oh, yeah. And then Peter breaks his leg again, or his leg is broken again.
That poor guy.
Because apparently this movie's budget accommodated for a lot of things, but it did not accommodate a speedster. So Peter, who's one of the three actually interesting characters in these last two films, is just tossed out of this movie. I don't think we actually even see him. We may see him very briefly at the funeral, but anyway. Jean walks through everyone and beats the crap out of them. Mystique tries to play the caring mommy card, where, again, we're told that Jean is Mystique is some kind of mommy figure and trainer and general, as you said, but we're never shown that they have this connection. There is no emotional payoff of why I'm supposed to care that Jean killed Mystique, which she does. Well, she accidentally kills her. She pushes her aside. And Mystique gets impaled on a piece of broken wood. And not gonna lie, I cheered. This is the single worst Mystique I have ever seen. She's whiny. She's inconsistent. She's a superhero for some reason. They took one of the most badass female characters of the entire X-Men franchise, which is saying a lot, because there's 50 bajillion thousand characters. And ruined her and wasted her to the point where when she dies, I cheered. I said, finally. Because I've been talking about how annoying she is since Days of Future Past, probably, if not First Class. All right. At the very least, Jean feels bad about the fact that she killed Mystique. but she fries away as Raven dies. At Raven's funeral, there's some random nameless ex-kids, whatever. Storm's actress is once again absolutely wasted. She has maybe like 3 lines in this entire movie. Hank and Charles after the funeral talk, and Hank basically blames Charles for some reason. But Charles blames himself for taking for talking Raven out of leaving or whatever. And I'm sorry, I can't be bothered to care. Like, it is so incredibly obvious that this is not about Jean herself, but this like power that she can't control, that it's not even funny. But the explanation here is that it's Charles's fault for, again, protecting Jean's innocence. Like, if Jean had known the truth, she could have been a very traumatized child and possibly could have never gotten over that. And maybe eventually her own subconscious, maybe her subconsciously, her mind could have erased it by itself before Charles did anything. Like, you just don't know, because again, she, like, there was a crash. Her memory could have, anyway. I'm starting to repeat myself too much. I'm just moving on. So Charles isn't wrong here. Like, there was no reason for Mystique to be there. Like, Hank could have taken over training. Eric could have stayed and taken over the training, because it seems like the only reason Eric didn't stay at the end of the last movie was because plot didn't let him stay. There was really no reason why he couldn't stay at the X-Mansion and actually been the one to train these new bunch of X-Men. Anyway, Hank says they should have been protecting the children from him. Based on what? I don't get this movie. Anyway, Jean cries behind some dumpster when it's raining. Cliche number 4. Crying in the rain. And there's like some blood from Mystique, I guess. I thought her blood was blue.
Mystique?
Yeah, whatever. Maybe I'm wrong.
It doesn't matter. I don't think I've ever seen Mystique bleed with the exception of this one time, so.
It doesn't matter. Oh, no, wait. She bled when Magneto shot her in Days of Future Past. Never mind.
Yeah, and it was red.
All right, whatever. Oh, and she keeps saying, what did I do? This movie is not new, not original, and not exciting. Or entertaining. The aliens arrive at the crime scene and pose as FBI. I don't even remember if they flashed a badge or not, but they come to talk to Jean's dad, and this is they're there to help him. And to be honest, I'm distrustful of anybody that I don't know that comes up to me, especially if they work for the government, and says, trust me, I'm here to help you. I'm like, are you though? And especially when they look as creepy as Jessica Chastain looks in this movie. It was like, she was like, okay, so how much emotion do I show in this scene? None. How much emotion do I show in this scene? None, 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 none. Oh, you can have a little bit of anger here. So they want info on Jean, on who she is, where she is. And Jean's dad isn't stupid. So he's like, I'm going to talk to a lawyer. But then they sort of kill him. Or do some weird tummy twisty sucky thingy. I don't know. It's unclear. But it's also unclear how this actually gives them the information they want out of Jean's dad. Whatever. We flash to a random island. No. Oh, no. Oh, please, no. We flash to a random island that Jean has arrived on. Oh, no. Oh, thank God. It's a hippie commune with some New Zealand. Oh, God. Okay, you know what? This is supposed to be Genosha? Really?
I mean, it's probably the start of the Genosha. I mean,
no, it's not. No, it's not. No, it's not. In the comics, Genosha is a human-controlled island country full of, I guess, imperialists. Cause I don't know. It's the history of the nation isn't really clear. But it's an island that is like north of Madagascar, if I remember correctly. Anyway. In Genosha, Mutants are enslaved. This is like apartheid taken to the extreme of an extreme of an extreme. Where mutants are identified due to genetic testing and are basically like reprogrammed to be slaves. And Magneto ends up basically invading and causing so much violence and threatening everybody to the point where the United Nations is just basically like, okay, you can have Genosha, just let all the humans go. And Magneto's like, all right, cool. And that is how Genosha is born. The structure of the country is not an uninhabitable island, right? But anyway, Magneto is in charge here. And fuck this movie. This is the part at the very, so honestly, this is the part where on my initial watch of the movie, I knew from this moment that it was gonna suck. Like, I wasn't wowed by this movie beforehand, but this moment killed it for me because I love the story of Genosha until they ruin it. It's such an interesting twist on a story. And it had so much potential, and it's wasted. But wasting potential is something these movies do well. So Eric is very concerned, but offers her some tea. He notices the blood on the shirt and asks her what's going on. And he's like, I'm not Charles. I can't read your mind. You just have to tell me. But she doesn't. She asks him about hurting people and says Eric doesn't do that anymore. Why? I mean, I'm guessing he probably stopped after all the bullshit with Apocalypse. Why? We're not really given a reason of... Nothing is explained in this movie! Except the Phoenix Force! So Jean doesn't know how to stop... It's his... So she asked him about, like, killing people and how he stopped. And she says Jean doesn't... She says that she doesn't know how to stop or what's happening to her. You killed one person. Like, calm down. You're not exactly, you know, a serial killer. And it was an accident. She killed two people. And both times they were accidents with zero intention or effort. Whatever. So a lady comes in who will not be named until the last possible second of the movie. She says, the military incoming. Two American birds. The army has arrived. Apparently, the U.S. government gave Magneto this land because somehow, don't question it, they're looking for Jean, and they asked to take a look around, and Eric is like, how would you feel if I came to your house and asked to take a look around? Eric actually covers and says Jean's not here before the agent, soldier, whoever he has asked to take a look around. Jean starts, basically breaks one of the helicopters, and I guess everybody inside gets killed, or they, like, move to the other helicopter, and then Eric and Jean have this, like, battle of the...
So she destroys the first one with no one inside of it, and then...
No, there were people inside of it.
Okay, then she might have just killed the pilots, then, because everyone else was out of the chopper at the time, and then... And then for the second one, Magneto is actually fighting against her, and he pretty much told the general and his men, get the hell in the damn chopper and I'm gonna get you out of here. And that's what ended up happening. He got them out of there to save them.
Yep. Bear in mind that they came looking for Jean because she killed killed the cops when she crushed their cars. I forgot about that. Before she kills Mystique. So the army gets sort of like tossed away by Magneto. Jean tosses Eric aside. Eric tells her to leave because he's protecting the mutants from her. She's like, oh, I thought this was a place of protection. And he's like, I'm protecting everyone here from you, basically. So she leaves. The news reports of a temporary mutant internment facility bill being put on the floor. That was fast, which only proves what? That Magneto was right. Because I think in the last movie, or was it Days of Future Past or something, Eric tells Charles about, like, look how quickly they turn on us or something like that. And this just proves that. Basically, they say that they're pulling this bill on the floor after the Jean Grey incident. I mean, honestly, I hate to say this, but, like, as comic-wise as things go, this seems relatively minor compared to, like, destroying the San Francisco Bridge, or, you know, storming Alcatraz, or trying to murder the president of the United States, destroying the world. Like, this is the catalyst that break. This is the straw that breaks the camel's back. Give me a break. Charles tries to use the bat phone to talk to the president, but it says the person in the end says the line isn't working anymore. I'm like, really? That fast? Like, no explanation? No, I demand to know what happened, Xavier. No? All right. There's an international search for Jean Grey, and we go to a bar where an old dude is sitting drinking scotch, and as the alien approaches. And at first, it's sort of, I guess that it was an alien, but then it's actually Jean projecting, so nobody sees her but sees the old man. Somehow the alien lady managed to track Jean to, do they have like a Phoenix Force tracer? But anyway, so she finds her in this bar, and she knows who Jean is, but Jean doesn't know who she is, all that jazz, so offers her to help her. She says, the X-Men can't comprehend what you are, and we find out that Hank is not at the school. He goes to see Magneto. He wants Eric's help to fight for Raven, and this is where Eric actually finds out that Raven is dead. I mean, he hasn't seen her in like 20 years. 10-20 years, and they weren't really friends for the 10 years before that, but all right, sure, there's that weird single tier thing, cliche number 5. He wants Eric to kill Raven. Eric has his own like mutant underground network, sure, why not? And they're gonna kill Jean when they find her. Jean arrives at the aliens' posh residence. And basically they say that if she can't control it, we'll destroy it, meaning the Phoenix Force. So she takes Jean into a private room, which goes all cosmic-y, and says that the Force was drawn to Jean. It's a Force that, like, they followed, and they were watching, and they wanted to harness it, but the Phoenix Force basically destroyed everything it touches until Jean. This is something that's really never explained in the comics either, about like why the Phoenix Force chooses Jean specifically, but it doesn't really matter. This is a very minor thing. So she wants to help Jean control it and help Jean to become the savior of the universe and restore the world. The greatest force the universe has ever seen, whatever. One of Eric's people found Jean in New York. Charles manages to tap Eric via Cerebro and says that to locate Jean. Charles only plans on taking Scott, which seems like a really stupid idea, but okay. But Scott actually convinces, basically Scott says like, I'm Scott, Storm and Kurt are coming with me.
Well, also, no, Kirk was already going to come.
Kurt was only going to come purely for teleportation and then return back to the school.
Yeah.
Also, this should be noted, Storm is called Storm, but Kurt is not referred to as Nightcrawler. He is Kurt.
But Scott does refer to Storm by her first name during this entire sequence right here.
He does. You're right. Let's see. Basically, Scott says he needs them. There's a confrontation incoming. Both parties arrive to New York. Magneto, Hank, and the two generic mutants with no names. And says, Eric's gonna stay out of my way. Charles is like, if you do this, your homeland will be gone. I'm like, his homeland is already on thin ice because of Jean, if their news reports are anything to go by. So, like, how far of a stretch is it from mutant and temporary internment to the most powerful before Magneto's locked up in a cell right next to Jean because he's deemed too dangerous? So killing Jean won't bring back Raven, and Eric's like, I don't care about your speeches, Charles. The banter is adorable for 0 seconds. And then, of course, a fight breaks out. This is literally repeating the fight from, what's it called? From
the first X-3.
Film. No, the third X-Men film.
Oh.
Because remember in The Last Stand, Charles and Eric sort of both go to talk to Jean, And Eric tells Juggernaut and Callisto and the other chick that, like, nobody gets in. And it's pretty much the same thing. Magneto's trying to get inside the house to get to Jean to kill her while these two teams of morons duke it out. Eric can still manipulate, I guess, the metal deep within the earth or whatever, but he ends up pulling a subway car out of the earth, which was pretty cool. The alien lady says that Jean will fight back, and she's just not going to let them kill her. No, I'll give them credit. This is an upgrade from the X3, I guess. The power is you. Eric manages to get inside. There's still people inside the car. I guess it's kind of unclear when they get out, but whatever. We don't care about civilian casualties.
What are those?
Eric isn't able to kill her. Civilian casualties only count when we need to use them as props. Jean is crushing Eric's helmet, meanwhile crushing his head, which is interesting, and then rips it apart and throws it out. He gets knocked over, and then so does his girl Friday. There's like this battle of the sidekicks. And at first I thought they were doing a thing with Callisto, like this is supposed to be a new version of Callisto, but Callisto wasn't a telepath, so I have no idea who this chick is supposed to be yet. We will get to who she is later because they do name drop pointlessly, and I'm very angry. Charles tries to reach Jean, and he manages to teleports him inside. And he meets the alien lady, and then Jean actually, as Mike mentioned earlier, forces Charles to walk to her. And there's a flashback where Charles tells Jean's dad that she's not a lost cause. And he knows that Jean is still in there, and then the alien lady says to follow her into her future. And it does look like Charles is able to reach Jean. Jean says, free me, take the gift. She says she'll try. And they do this kind of, as the military arrives to neutralize and arrest the mutants. The alien is not only sucking away the Phoenix Force, but it sort of looks like she's sucking away parts of Jean as well. And Charles somehow understands that this is exactly what's happening. Scott manages to, he's like, oh, this is going to kill her, blah, 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 Jean, you have to let go. So Scott blasts Jean from the alien lady. How he knew to do that, I don't know, but okay. The alien lady now has the Phoenix Force, I guess, or part of it, as mutants are arrested and put in a train to prison. The cop tells Kurt, who didn't really do anything bad out of everybody here, because he was mostly being mind controlled between the other mutant and Charles, that my kid used to be a fan. I'm like, your kid is probably still a fan. You're just pissy about it. Charles says he's the villain for, okay, sure. You still haven't done anything that wrong in this movie, but okay, fine. Jean, they're all like handcuffed and wearing like collars, which suppress their mutant powers. And then Jean is sort of like extra strapped down plus the collar. What is controlling her? Alien lady wants the rest of the Phoenix Force. And they talk about sort of like what Raven would want. I'm like, Raven is not relevant to this conversation, but sure, we'll rescue Jean. The two mutants that are on Eric's team are also here. They're not there for long, but just thought I'd point that out. Spiky hair guy and long tailed spike guy and the other one. Cops try to lock the train down as Eric and Charles says, like, you have to free us, we can help you. As like the aliens sort of descend upon the train. We find out that shooting the aliens doesn't work. Bigger guns also don't work. The cops basically get picked off one by one as and then the other cop who was like, my kid used to be a fan, actually ends up freeing everybody. So Scott needs to get Charles to Jean. I guess this is what Raven would want, for them to protect Jean, because Jean is the only mutant that Raven cared about, I guess. Lot of shaky cam. Lot of shaky cam. I feel like shaky cam is another cliche, so at least point where it's six. The fight scenes and like the use of metal, I will admit, when Eric fights, is pretty cool though. And then we have this moment where Celine Oh, there it is. So this mutant like kills a guy and then she gets pulled out of the train. And Eric yells, Celine! And this is that this is cliche number 7 of that name dropping mutants. Because he called her Celine. Celine in the comics is one of the world's oldest mutants. She's like part of her power is being sort of like an energy vampire. She sucks away like part people's energy to stay young and like forever and live forever. She's a cool villain. She's very like, anyway. It's to Hank, me, it's just insulting.
Hank was pretty badass in the scene too.
Hank was also doing pretty well. I couldn't quite tell if Kurt's accent existed or not, but that's okay.
It's been 10 years. He's been able to adapt a little bit here and there.
It's not how accents work. I'm sorry. But anyway, I will say that the metalwork is fun, especially when like Eric, the guy we saw who like the alien from like the president who used to like work for the president or something, he like punches. Eric uses the metal to like get him to punch through the metal and then uses it to break his arm and toss him out the train. That was pretty cool. Hank goes to help Storm. Cop from earlier dies despite Kurt trying to help. And then Kurt goes emotion. And he like teleports one of the aliens literally in front of the oncoming train, which is pretty cool. Let's see, gets cracked. Oh, there's this cool moment right after Eric kills that alien guy. Storm uses her wind powers to pull a lot of the other guys into a different train car. And then Eric just goes, squish! And squishes the train car and just tosses it aside. That was pretty cool.
I like when Kurt grabbed the one that was disguised as a woman, just like yeah, kind of poofed him out, just dropped it right in front of another train to get hit by the train.
I think it was their train, but that was still pretty funny.
He just dropped her off and just went deuces and just left.
Yep. So let's see. So a lot of these aliens are just dying finally, but the Killer Queen, because this alien lady has no name, we gotta call her something. Joins. The lightning is useless against her. She sort of like low-key absorbs it and starts and sort of walks through Storm and Kurt and Hank and then even and then Eric and his infinite wisdom. What does he do? The one thing we know doesn't work. He just points all these guns at her. It does manage to slow her down. I will give him credit for that.
I think that was the point. The point was like what you do is you try to slow him down.
Except there's nothing.
So you can give yourself a chance to actually think of a new plan to go after the person.
I guess. Anyway, so Charles is trying to wake up Jean while Scott is like lasering the bad guys away. He manages to reach Jean and apologizes. More aliens are on the train that are being held off by Scott. Jean says she forgives Charles. No kidding. This entire everything outside the Phoenix Force could have been solved with one freaking conversation. Scott and Magneto get also tossed aside. Are no match for the alien. Jean will. She says she'll protect her family. I guess they're a family. Sure. We're not really. We don't see them hanging out really. We see them do one heroic thing and everything goes to shit. So, like, I don't see them as a family. I see them as just, like, people that happen to work together well. Like, we're not shown that they're a family. But whatever. The train flies off the rails, literally, as Jean protects everyone with these, like, psychic bubbles or whatever. And it lands in kind of a quarry. Everybody's fine, but the aliens are still coming, and Jean starts dusting them. Just full on dusting them. One guy stabs her in the back, then she gets better and just destroys them. Then the lady, alien lady begins sucking Jean's life force away and wants the power. And Jean's like, oh, you want the power? You're gonna get it. Oh, the cliche, I'm gonna give you all the power until it destroys you lot. Joke. We're at number 8 now. For some reason, although it didn't seem to be an issue before, the dusting is starting to affect the others. And basically, the alien lady tells her that if Jean kills her, she'll also kill them all. Sure. And then she says, emotions make you weak. Oh, the old, no, my emotions make me strong cliche. Number 9. And then she takes her to space, and they both dematerialize, and there's like a cool explosion viewed from space, and we see a phoenix flying. And Jean's dead for realsies this time. She's free, Charles says. So then Scott is putting a new plaque on the school title. And it's the Jean Grey School now for Gifted Mutants. At least when they renamed the school in the comics, it was after it was destroyed for the umpteenth time and got like a major upgrade. Here it feels a little cliche, but whatever. And then Jean talks about how she's like not realsies dead. She's evolved and become something else. And that this is not the end of her. We see that Storm is teaching. We see Peter for the last time as he tells some kids to slow down. Ha, 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 ha. And he's walking with Kurt and a random blue-haired mutant. Like, it couldn't have even been, but anyway, Hank is apparently the new headmaster because we see him go into what used to be Charles's office and start writing stuff at the desk. Charles, meanwhile, is in Paris enjoying his retirement when he's approached by Eric, who has a game of chess with him. Who has a chess set with him. And Charles is not in the mood to play chess. And Eric tells him that I came to see an old friend because a long time ago he saved my life, and basically offers to then save Charles and return the favor. And they agree to one game, and that's the end of the movie. So this is pretty much the thing that should have happened at the end of Apocalypse, where Charles and Eric actually come together and have a friendship. And like, this movie feels so cheap and so half-assed, I don't even blame the actors. It seems like everyone was told, don't show too much emotion, don't overact, and they took, and were given bad direction because of a bad director. I hope Simon Kinberg learns a thing or two and never repeats these mistakes again, because this is what this movie could have been. This could have been a movie about Charles and Eric actually teaming up to work together for the common goal of rescuing mutants from a vile government, right?
So,
like, in a la
Kinberg, X2, as a director, has done one episode of The Twilight Zone. He did the episode Blurry Man, which came out in 2019. He did, obviously, Dark Phoenix as his film directorial debut. And he has one movie coming out next year in 2022. It's so weird saying that right now.
Called
The 355. So, and it's showing as completed. So it's a film.
Oh, hey, Jessica Chastain is in this again. Let's hope she has emotions. When it says, the description is PG-13. It says, when a top secret weapon falls into mercenary hands, wildcard CIA agent Mason Brown will need to join forces with rival badass German agent Marie, former MI6 and cutting edge computer genius. Oh my God, this sounds so cliche.
You ready for something funny though?
What?
Look at who's also in the cast.
Oh, Jesus. Do I want to?
Sebastian Stan.
No!
Lupita Nyong'o.
Oh, no! Oh, Penelope Cruz is in this movie. I won't be watching it. Sorry!
And also Edgar Ramirez is in the film as well. So you got two people from the MCU in the film.
I hope this movie, wow, Diane Kruger is in this movie. You know what? Oh, because she's the one that they team up. Okay, fine, whatever. I have very little faith in this movie.
Wait,
already. But
Bing Bing Fan? Like the Bing Bing Fan from...
I don't know what that means. But anyway, let's
Bing
talk...
Bing Fan is an actress from China.
Oh, my bad.
Oh, she was the one from Days of Future Past. She was the one who played Blink.
Oh my God, I loved her. I apologize for
and then she was
shooting
in,
her name.
And then she was in Iron Man 3. She played Wu Zhaiqi.
Anyway, so to be honest, I like Bing Bing Fan. I hope this movie is successful. I probably will not go and see it, just in general, because it just sounds like a generic action flick. I watch those on DVD. But anyway, I don't understand what happened with this movie. Maybe it was rushed to production, because I think this movie was being made roughly as Apocalypse was being finished.
So according to this film, The New Mutants, which came out last year, and Deadpool 2, which came out in 2018, were filmed around the same time, with New Mutants filmed in Boston, Deadpool in Vancouver, and Dark Phoenix in Montreal.
Yeah, so clearly whoever was in charge of this was not on site, and this actually explains a lot. But anyway, the script for this movie was crap. There is zero emotion in this movie that makes me care about anything. Like, we're not even shown really the devastation of the planet that the Phoenix Force supposedly destroyed. Like, I fully believe this alien lady could have been lying the entire time. Like, she could have made it up because she's just power hungry. And then, I guess, this movie could have... I think Dark Phoenix was a mistake. In the sense that, that a sequel to Apocalypse shouldn't have been made, but they shouldn't have done Dark Phoenix. I think after Apocalypse, you should have gone into a Genosha story, or even better, do an old-fashioned, you know, mutants versus mutant haters and have the school get blown up. Like, come on, the school has only been blown up once in this entire franchise. This is very unrealistic to the X-Men comics.
So apparently this is canonically a repeat of the events of X-Men Apocalypse after history was changed in X-Men Days of Future Past.
That makes no sense.
Exactly.
Who came up with that? They need to be slapped.
That's up on IMDb.
That is bullshit. Because the events of Apocalypse take place after Days of Future. Oh my God. I hate this. Why did you... You know what? I'm done. Ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, you want something crazier? Hans Zimmer, the...
I know. He came back to do the music for this movie.
Even though he had retired from composing superhero movies.
To be honest, the music in this movie was probably the only thing I have zero complaints about. But...
Oh, no. Hans Zimmer is a magnificent with his music.
Like, the only thing that... this is probably the only thing that gave any emotion to this movie. Like, this movie could have been about Peter finally... telling Magneto he's his dad, and Magneto dealing with all of that as he's trying to adjust to being a normal human in the school. And maybe then he finds out about this whole Genosha thing, or maybe there's a lot of mutant supremacists that are protesting the school because everybody knows this is a school for mutants now, because, like,
so
there are so many things this movie could have been instead of what we got.
So I know you've kind of glossed over a little bit at the beginning, but director Simon Kinberg has stated that he cut a good deal of the original storyline of Dark Phoenix to focus more on the ending, the storyline that originally began in X-Men First Class, and focus more on Jean's character for the film. As such, the elements of the Hellfire Club and the alien race known as Shi'ar and their Shi'ar Empire from the original comic book storyline were removed from the film adaptation to cut down on unnecessary subplots. Members of the Hellfire Club, such as Sebastian Shaw and Emma Frost, obviously previously appeared in X-Men First Class.
Yeah, you know, honestly, that sounds like a cop-out to a bad script. Like, nobody asked you to...
But yet again, you did say that he wanted to make this a two-film project and that he wasn't allowed to do it, so who knows how much he actually had to cut out to make it a one-film project.
And that's the problem. He focused on cutting shit out, not on making shit make sense. And that really shows. If I have a two movie script and I need to make one movie, then I'm going to have to rethink the entire project, not just splice together two separate movies hoping they work. Because part of this movie looks like it's supposed to be developing the relationship between all these characters, and in developing Magneto and his mutant hippie commune to then the Dark Phoenix. Like, I'm sorry, but like, I just... Also, like, who thinks they're going to be able to get away with a two-parter after the sub-performance of Apocalypse? Like, it sounds like he just wanted...
So, according to this, filming was completed in October 2017. However, the entire third act was reshot in late 2018 due to negative test screenings.
You know, that makes me wonder if there was a worse version of this movie.
Are you ready for this? I'm going to add on to this. Chris Claremont, who wrote the original Dark Phoenix storyline in the Marvel comics, was very pleased with this adaptation.
Maybe he watched the original, the test screen version and not this, because the, I guess maybe because it has some hint of originality to it, I guess, sort of.
Well, Kingberg noted that after watching Logan, he wanted to go with a more natural style than the stylish. Because,
sure, that happened. Also, Chris Claremont, I'm sorry, you're wrong. This movie sucks. Chris Claremont is allowed to be wrong, and he's definitely wrong about this movie. To be honest, it was half-assed. It really was, and I don't blame the cast. I really don't. I think I really like the actors. The characters we really wanted to see more of were Storm, Kurt, and Peter. We didn't really get to see any more of it, and we saw very little development to Storm. The only difference between this Storm and the one from Apocalypse is this one got a name.
Yep.
All right, let's end my suffering. Michael? All right.
This was an hour and 53 minutes, and it got an IMDb score of a 5.8 out of 10.
Yeah, I think that's generous, but sure.
All right. And then you can follow me on the social medias at Twitter on at the Lindenbaum 75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions. The website, obviously, txhdhockey.com for the show specifically, /nerdynotions. I'm apologizing in advance for this episode being buried upon articles and articles and articles of just hockey being how hockey season started 2 days ago or yesterday. Actually, I'm forgetting that this episode comes out January 14th. We're recording this episode a week in advance. I'm so sorry.
There's a reason for that.
Hockey season came. Yeah, because we'll get to that in a second. And then you can follow me on Twitch, twitch.tv/themichaelx75. Go to the channel. Go to my about page, look at my schedule. I have my schedule posted on there. I am doing some changes to my schedule. So please go to twitch.tv/themichaelx75 to know when I'm going live. My schedule is changing slightly, a little bit. And before I send it to Sasha for her to do her socials, the reason that we're recording this a week in advance is actually for two reasons. Number one, we're going to be using her regular recording time slot for the next few Wednesdays to record Voices from the Grid, because we need to get recording on Voices from the Grid. We only have 3 episodes recorded, and we are supposed to release on January 6th, which is the day we recorded this episode.
But we've got some work ahead of us.
Yeah, so we got some work ahead of us. The second reason is because...
WandaVision!
We're going to be recording either the Friday the episode releases or the Saturday afternoon, because I got to work, obviously, from like...
Saturday afternoon might be a little bit of an issue because it's my birthday.
Well, I'm talking about in general for the series.
In general for the season, yes.
It'll be either a Friday... We'll either record Friday afternoon and release it that evening, or it'll be recorded Saturday afternoon and release that evening. We're doing WandaVision. Each episode gets its own episode. Nobody cared about mine. Screw you.
here's the deal with WandaVision. It will be very, very spoilery, 100%.
There will be spoiler warnings on the episodes when we release them.
In case it wasn't obvious, this is a very spoiler-ridden show. You've been forewarned. But thank you so much for listening. Thank you for suffering with us as we took on a very roller coaster of a journey of ups and downs of the X-Men franchise. And please join us next time as we finally entered the long-awaited world of WandaVision.